American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more, right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
Moncrief on News Talk.
You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. Joanna Fortune is with us once again, with, of course, the added benefit this week that the kids can listen in to and so discover all their parents' tricks. Here's your first question. I have a gorgeous, bright and funny 10-year-old daughter. She does really well in school, has lots of friends and is adored by her little sister and family members. The issue I want to raise with you is her self-esteem and how she treats herself. She would frequently hit or punch herself in frustration or pull her hair and say really mean things about herself, like, I'm a little baby and I'm so stupid. This can happen when she's very upset about something. And although I know she can do it in private as well, she is also quite open with me and tells me she does it. If I find a bruise on her leg and question it, she will honestly tell me that it's a bang from the table or it's the place she's been poking herself. I think she needs some help, but I don't know where to start. She's a young 10-year-old, so I would like her to work with someone with a background in play therapy. I think she would respond very well to that. I suspect we will go privately, as no doubt a public waiting list would be very long. Do you have any advice on how to choose the right person? What qualifications should I be looking for? We're based in North Wicklow.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, you're asking all the right questions. Yeah. And this is real finger on the pulse stuff. So I think that's great. And you have a little girl who's doing mostly well most of the time. You know, she's doing well at school and she has friends and she's loved and she knows she's loved. But she is also not, what I'm going to say is emotionally regulating. And what I mean by that is that when feelings get too big for her, she's not able to reduce them from a boil to a simmer herself.
Yes. Yeah.
I wouldn't expect children to be able to kind of, oh yeah, I've worked that through and processed it utterly alone, you know, but just to be able to take it from, I'm stupid, I'm a baby, from that down to, okay, this is a bit big for me and I know what to do with it. And at 10, we would expect to see a little bit more of that. Again, not that they've nailed all of that by 10, but a bit more. I think I've said before that typically we look at children under 7 developmentally rather than chronologically. You know, I note here you say she's a young 10-year-old. That's what I mean. So it's not like 7 and that's it. They really need an available parent, caregiver, adult in a caregiving role to co-regulate them. Because when feelings get big, they stay big until someone with you can say, hey, I got you, and make it more manageable. By 10, she should technically be doing a little bit more of that on her own. And it just doesn't sound like she is. So I think you're on to the right track. A young 10-year-old for me could emotionally be 7. So that would be fine. But you're looking at she needs something that is going to help her work that through, process it and give her some of those skills. Play-based therapy, you're right. I think any therapy for a 10-year-old should have a play-based approach to it, be that psychotherapy, psychology or play therapy itself. We would all be using some kind of creative or play-based methodology because play is the language of children. It is how they make sense of their experiences. You say you're based in North Wicklow straight away. There's Play Therapy Wicklow on your doorstep. There's multiple practitioners in that practice, so you could go there. But what you're looking for is somebody who is not only trained, but certified. And I think that can get confusing when you're looking for a mental health practitioner. You're like, oh, well, this person, you know, they're trained. But are they trained and working up their clinical hours? Because after we train, we then do clinical or certification hours, accreditation hours. So you work usually at a lower rate, to be honest with you, but also under supervision just until you've clocked up usually around 400, 450 clinical hours. And then you go from being trained to accredited. So you're looking for someone who is an accredited play therapist, and there are accrediting bodies. So look, at anyone who is not going to flinch when you ask them. They would expect to be asked that, and they will be able to provide you with evidence of that certification.
Okay.
So those are the questions to ask. I think in the meantime, because look, you're right, public waiting lists are long, and because she's doing mostly well most of the time.
Even private is quite, can be long as
that's
well.
Exactly it. So you're not going to get somebody immediately. So I would get on a waiting list, get some kind of a gauge as to how long that might be. And if you're going, oh my goodness, it's 9 months, 12 months, get on another waiting list as well and then see who comes up first and see how she's doing. In the meantime at home, because she's coming to you and she's saying, you know, I got this bruise on my leg because I kicked the table when I was frustrated with myself. First of all, it's great that she's bringing that to you. What you want is that she brings it to you before she hurts herself.
Yeah.
So you can use that kind of ACT approach I've mentioned before. So you acknowledge the feeling. I know you were really frustrated that this didn't work out. Your picture didn't work out the way you wanted it to, or whatever it might be. And then communicate the limit. It's not okay to hurt yourself. You know, I want you to feel safe and be able to keep yourself safe. It's not okay to hurt yourself. And the T is target and alternative. The next time you feel like this, you can, whatever it is, have a little frustration. Frustration seems to be the one mentioned here. A frustration box that could be, you know, that you've got cotton wool. You can wet it and she can throw it at the wall. It'll stick. It's just wet cotton wool. It's not going to cause any damage or anything. But it's, you know, she can throw, get that. You know that sensation when you want to just throw something across the room? Yes, do, but throw this, not something that's going to break. If she wants to kick something, give her a balloon or a ball that she can kick around the garden, a balloon she can kick around the house, but she's getting that kicking sensation out in a way that's not hurting her, and different things like that that would help her. So I think if you take that approach at home with her, it's going to be really helpful while you're waiting for her to be seen. But yeah, I would suggest, I think you're on the right track. I would bring her to see somebody.
How does play therapy work? Actually, is it that, like, they play for the first few sessions and then everyone's talking about their feelings, or are you interpreting how they play?
Yeah, I mean, look, be you a psychotherapist, you'll have, if you're working with children, there'll be play-based training in that, or a full play therapist as well. What you're using is that the play is the means through which they're working through the feelings. So actually, they might not talk to you in a verbal way of, wait, till I tell you about the no good, very bad thing that's going on for me. But they work it through in the relationship. And there's something very therapeutic and transformative of having somebody bear witness to your process for you and reflect that back for you. So if you're the practitioner in that, it's not like you sit there in a chair, you know, stroking the chin, Freud style, and, you know, watch a child playing. You're in the play. But it is mostly child-led. So you're following their cues, and there are various types of different play that they will migrate towards, you know, that facilitate story play or sensory play or dress up, and they are working it through in the now. So play is the medium through which they work, not talking. Sometimes, you know, I find when I'm doing play-based work, particularly I do a play-based work with parents and children together, I will often say to parents, you know, the talking about it might be the outcome of this intervention, but it's not our starting point.
Yeah.
We're starting in a right here, right now. Where are you at today? That's what we're doing. And that's really where it goes with play. And it's really using play as a symbolic representation of things that are really difficult for kids to interweave with narrative.
Yeah.
You know, to say, wait till I tell you how overwhelmed I am with life. They don't.
Yeah.
They will do that in the little sand tray, or they will do that in their art, or they will do that in the play.
Yeah, but can you put that play into a context? If the parents have come along and said, "Or you know, our child is particularly upset with one particular thing."
Yeah.
Can you kind of gently steer them into, you know,
gently steer them with your agenda?
Not with your agenda, but so then would you like, if say they hated their teacher for instance, would you kind of then invent games that involve teachers?
But then you're doing something that's quite agenda oriented. So I want to address this with you. So that's child focused but adult led play, which has its role. It has its, but that's more directive than non-directive.
Right. Yeah.
So it really depends on what the child is coming with. And what we would tend to do is, at least at the beginning, just wait and see what the child brings in, because sometimes there's an issue that brings any of us, not just children, but any of us to a mental health professional. But when you sit down and you begin peeling the layers of the onion, you're actually saying, well, there's other issues that I wasn't even thinking about.
Yeah.
So sometimes a child is referred for a particular reason, but what they bring up is something that maybe the parents weren't even aware was going on for them, that was underpinning that, say, the overt behavior that got them in the door. They're bringing you what was underpinning it.
Yeah, yeah. Right, next question. I don't know if this is a problem or not. My son is six and he's obsessed with breasts. He is at the stage where everything is hilarious, and it's as if he's just realised that breasts aren't just for feeding. He's the eldest, so he can see me breastfeed our two youngest children over the last 4 years. He comments on them almost every time he sees them. Cartoons, pictures and storybooks, when he's doing his homework and there's an image of a woman, etc. Usually it's just, look, mammy, she has boobies, another banal remark. So it doesn't appear to be sexualized. My response is usually just, yes, she has breasts, and move on. Now, he doesn't make any remarks in person to women, thank God. So we're fairly sure he knows he's not supposed to be doing it. But it's tiring, and we're not sure why he cares so much, since we never made a big deal out of body parts in our household. I thought I had raised my son to be more considerate and not pass remarkable about people's bodies. Do I just ignore it and hope he stops? It's been going on for about 3 months now.
I always think it's us parents who struggle with the body stuff when kids start pointing out differences in a stranger walking up the street, and you're like, oh, don't say that, because we're embarrassed as adults. But actually, children learn through curiosity, especially at this age. You know, this is exactly how he learns. And what he's doing is he's noticing body differences. He does not have breasts.
Yes.
So that is immediately a body difference for him. And he's like, oh, it's not just my mom who has breasts. Other people do as well. And he's pointing that out. So I agree. There's nothing sexualized in this. You know, that's not what's going on for 6-year-olds. It's curiosity. And they are fascinated about bodies. This is where, you know, children are most inclined to, I'll show you yours if you show me mine, conversation with each other. And they're really just innately curious little beings. And also, you're right. Look, he has seen breasts a lot when you're breastfeeding throughout his life, actually, when you think about it, because he was breastfed and then watching his siblings being breastfed. So this has been a really open feature. And now he's not seeing them as much because you've stopped breastfeeding. But now he's naming when he observes other people with breasts. So actually there's context to this as well. So I just think, don't make a big deal out of it. But I just don't know about this whole ignore it and it'll go away. I don't know that that works in general with life. But with children, I'm not sure. So maybe a conversation about bodies. He is 6. So if you haven't, and it does sound like you've had something of a conversation with you, he says boobs and you say, yes, she has breasts. You're using anatomically correct language and you're naming this and you're not embarrassed by it. So I think extend your conversation about bodies, talking about private body parts and about differences between bodies and boundaries. And just say to him, you know, we don't point out who has that, or we don't point and say, but if you've questions, you can always bring those to me or your other parent or whoever it is in his attachment safety network, whoever his caregivers are.
It could be, just be a fascination he has at the moment because he's noticed this difference. Absolutely. And then in 6 months' time, you know, it'll be something else.
Absolutely. Yeah. And also watch your reaction when he says it, because he's definitely watching it. So if your eyes widen and you're like, he's like, oh, interesting. Let me say that again and see, is it the same reaction? So it could simply be that it's a phase. It's 3 months now. It's quite a while.
Okay, that's going on for a while.
It is going on for a while.
Because it often strikes me, though, that, like, you know, the parents might be brilliant doing the poker face, but someone comes in for a cup of tea.
100%.
Bang, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, but I don't think he's doing this to consciously shock either. Yeah, it doesn't sound like he's going for a shock. It just sounds like he's saying, oh, look, oh, look, oh, look. Mm. I think it's much more to do with him being suddenly aware that there are people other than mom who has breasts.
Yeah.
Because hers were just so normal for him.
Yeah.
You know, but now he's like, oh, wow, I never knew this. Yeah. Let me share this fascinating fact. So I would just put a boundary, gentle yet firm boundary on it, but don't make a big deal of it.
Yeah. Now, this is an interesting one. My grandson is 5 years old. He's very sensitive. His father, my son-in-law, has quite a short temper. He shouts at my grandson a lot, even for minor episodes of bad behaviour. The shouting can be quite frightening. My grandson gets very upset and sometimes screams heart-rendingly in response. There's no corporal punishment involved. I find these scenes distressing to witness, and I'm wondering if I should intervene, or is it not my place? My daughter does not agree with the shouting, but is not able to prevent it.
Oh, I mean, okay, I'm going to come at this fairly direct.
Yeah.
Like, this is not okay.
Yeah.
And there are lots of things going on in this that are not okay. But ultimately, shouting at a child, especially in this aggressive, repeated way, causes significant damage to children as they grow and develop. Like, there's evidence for that. That's not my opinion. That's a fact. And especially when shouting at children is in, and I don't know if it does necessarily here, but involves hurtful or abusive language or words.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit different than all parents out there take a breath at the moment, because it's different from you saying at a loud voice, would you get out from under my feet? It is midterm after all.
Yeah.
You know, you saying that is not the same as an adult standing over you, a small child, and yelling at you with an angry, contorted face that's enraged and saying words that are hurtful and mean. The fact that an adult is writing this letter and saying the shouting can be frightening is a concern.
Yeah.
The grandson getting upset, but sometimes screaming heart-rendingly in response, that's distress. That's not upset.
Yeah.
That's actually a high distress signal. And that's really damaging and concerning. Now, what I would say to you is a couple of things. You're asking me if you should intervene or if it's not your place. I mean, you are a member of this family. This is your grandchild. It's your daughter who's living here. So I don't think it's not your place, but I think that's for you to call. But I'm curious about how do you envisage intervening? You know, are you thinking he's going to listen to you and engage with you, given that his wife seems unable to achieve this with him? And I'm also curious why she doesn't feel she's able to prevent it, or is she not being heard as well, or what else might be going on? It is in the category of emotionally damaging behavior. If you don't feel you could intervene, but it's bothering you that much, you can also make a child welfare report by calling TUSLA and asking to speak with a duty social worker and sharing your concerns. And they will advise you if this meets threshold, if they need to do something, you can do that. Ideally, even if you do bring this up, or dad can be spoken to and he's like, yeah, I lose my temper and I hate it and I'm filled with remorse and regret and I really need help with this. Ideally, he would engage with a psychotherapist, a psychologist for anger management to help him work through what's going on there. Also attending a parenting program that would give more positive approaches to parenting in general, but particularly positive discipline. I don't know that this is discipline or just shouting, and potentially relationship counselling too, but I might prioritise his own work and the parenting work before that. I'm wondering if there's repair, when he's yelling at this little boy afterwards, does he come and say, I'm so sorry?
Yeah.
Now, look, if you keep saying sorry and keep doing it, your apology is diluted, let's be honest. But I'm wondering about the repair, because I'm not hearing that there, because otherwise you have a small child who is in a high level of distress repeatedly and there isn't repair. It might reduce down a bit.
Yeah.
But there isn't that accountability, I guess, is the word, and taking responsibility. And are there other children witnessing this as well? Or is this, there's one child at the receiving end? I would take this quite seriously, whether or not you should be the one to speak, because what you're using in here in terms of, it's quite frightening for you and you get upset by it, that you say you find these scenes distressing to witness. It's also happening in front of you. So if the dad is happy to behave like this in front of you, he is opening up to your feedback.
Yeah.
Otherwise he wouldn't do it in front of you.
Yeah. That's absolutely true. Now, whether he wants to hear about this or not, I don't know.
But this is serious. Yeah. It is damaging. And take it very seriously, because that child is going to suffer and is suffering under that.
One gets the sense there's a family dynamic here, not
just... That's actually how it sounds.
What's going on here.
That is. Yeah. I mean, no, that's not explicitly stated, but I would infer the same, that there is something deeper and that also your daughter is struggling to manage this. So the little boy is not the only one struggling.
Yeah, indeed. That's the case. Going back to the question we had just before that, I was changing after swimming one day. This little kid pointed at me and said at the top of their voice, "Mammy, I can see that lady's boobies." The mother was mortified. I thought it was funny, says Adrienne. Someone else says, my sister's 3-year-old said to his mum when she undressed, "Mom, I didn't know you had buttons on your chest." For me, jumper.
You can't help but laugh then.
Joanne, thanks a million.
Thank
as
you
ever.
So much.
Joanne, a fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton and adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.